Call the meeting to order. Ask Vice President Howard Bailey for our invocation.
Please bow our heads. Oh, great Supreme Spirit, we come to you first to ask for forgiveness of our shortcomings. We ask for guidance to assist this very august body, to lead them in their hearts and minds to do what is best for this university and all those who are surrounded by this university. We ask you to bless us and that everyone who has been able to get here today be able to return to their home safely. That the decisions made here benefit this great institution. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Ask our Secretary Regent Dennison to call the roll.
Mr. Corey Dodds.
Present.
Ms. Cynthia Harris. Mr. Freddie Higdon.
Present.
Mr. Jim Johnson.
Jim is here.
He's present. Mr. James Kennedy. Dr. Patricia Minter.
Present.
Mr. David Porter.
Present.
Mr. John Ridley.
Here.
Mr. Larry Zelke.
Declare we have a quorum and ready to proceed with business. Previously, you've been distributed electronically your minutes for our fourth quarter meeting on October 26, 2012. Are there any additions or corrections to those minutes? Entertain a motion for approval.
Move for approval.
Regent Minter moved.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Dodds. Any other discussion or comment? All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. Approved unanimously. We have before you the agenda.
Chair, if I could, before we get started on our committee reports, Todd Stewart's got some appointments that this afternoon, and with our change in meeting time, he may not be able to be here till the end of the meeting. And we got data from the NCAA just this week, and so I've asked Todd to come and brief the board on the academic progress rate data that we just received a few days ago from the NCAA, and he'll follow up with specifics, but ask Todd to do so at this point.
Sure. Todd?
Thank you. Ago on the academic front with the recently completed first semester, we got all the grades in, and of our 387 student athletes, the average grade point average, cumulative grade point average of those 387 is a 3.04. And 11 of our 15 sport programs have a team cumulative grade point average of a 3.0 or higher. Certainly feel good about that. And on the APR front, what APR stands for, if you don't know, is called the academic progress rate. Something that was put in place by the NCAA a few years ago, which we totally support. We think it's a great thing. What it's a statistical analysis of obviously grades and progress for the degree. And you have to have a minimum, a team has to have a minimum APR, a multi-year APR is measured over a four-year period. You must have a minimum APR of a 930 or higher to be eligible to compete in postseason competition. And a number of schools aren't meeting that. Men's basketball team did not do that. But I'm very pleased to say that all but two of our sports actually have a multi-year APR of a 950 or higher, and the two that don't have a 949 and a 946. So we have a very good standing relative to GPA and the APR.
And the penalty if you don't meet it?
If you don't meet it, you're banned from posting the play the following year. Plus, it's just domino effect of that too is obviously hurtful to not make those people play, but the stigma that creates postseason recruiting, potential players who are like to transfer out, so that are in the academic, so it's something you want to avoid on all costs.
Does anyone have any questions?
We'll follow up with the board on that spreadsheet.
Just a quick question. The first time I ever heard the phrase APR, the number was 925. When did it move up?
Actually, it's in the process of
okay.
To make this more confusing than it probably already is. It's a gradual escalation to 930. what it really is you have to have a multi-year APR of 930 over a four-year period,
okay,
or a two-year APR of 930.
Okay.
Beginning with the 2015-16 year, it's a minimum 930.
And perfect is?
Perfect is now.
Which means 100% graduation rate and progress. So we're in good shape with that important NCAA measure.
Anyone else? Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Doc.
Anything else, Mr. Stewart?
No.
You have before you the agenda. If there's no objections, we will proceed with the agenda as presented. Since the board has started to utilize the consent agenda format, I will, before turning it over to the various committee chairs, I will proceed down the list and direct the board to the Finance and Budget Committee agenda items. Is there any board member that would desire to remove an item for individual discussion in Finance and Budget?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I did have a question about something in the budget revisions, but I don't know. Does that need to be removed? Is that a question?
Not to discuss it.
Not to,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll wait.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other item wanted, desired by a board member to remove from the Finance and Budget Committee for individual discussion? If not, we'll proceed to Academic Affairs Committee. Is there an item in the Academic Affairs Committee agenda that a board member would desire to remove for individual discussion?
I would like to ask the board, you all have had a chance to review the internal audit plan of work, January 1, 2013, June 30, 2013. This was discussed with Bailey Jordan at our committee meeting. But if there's anything further any board member would like to add to that, he is at work on that audit schedule and has completed one of the items on that audit schedule. The NCAA football ticket compliance audit is now complete, and he and his Grant Thornton team are pursuing other audits on this schedule. But I would ask if any board member has anything related to our internal audit schedule you would like to discuss. Over the course of the next few months, we'll begin to move forward with a search process and again, continue to rely on Grant Thornton, specifically Bailey Jordan, to guide us in that process.
And it seems to be working well.
It is. I have a lot of respect for Bailey Jordan and the team that he's put together.
Right. The last committee is Executive Committee. Is there a region that would desire to remove any item from the agenda or individual discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to remove item 3.2 for discussion, please.
So noted. Item 3.2 will be removed for individual discussion. Is there any other item in the Executive Committee that a member would like to remove for individual discussion? There being one item noted, I would now entertain a motion that with respect to the other committees and their action items that we move by consent agenda for approval. Do I hear the motion?
I move.
Motion by Regent Dennison.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Porter. Excuse me. He's my window scraper this morning. I've got to start over. Moved by Regent Dennison, seconded by Regent Porter. Is there any other discussion or comment? All in favor of approval of those action items by consent?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I need to ask my question about the finance?
We'll come back to it.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, I won't lose you. Won't leave you. Any other discussion? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, aye. No. We have approval for all action items with the exception of item 3.2 under Executive Committee. I will now go back to the Finance and Budget Committee and turn that over to Mr. Porter. His action items have been approved, but he can now address those questions or comments under his committee.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments on these items? You have the Patty.
My question is about action item 1.3, which is the operating budget revisions. And I'd like to have a better explanation about the $171,000 in revenue from Navitas royalties to be used for academic affairs initiatives, including support for internationalization. Just like to have, you know, have for the record what that money is going to be used for.
I'll refer to Provost Emsley.
Yeah, we receive royalties from the Navitas Corporation for students who are enrolled in the Pathways program. And from that account, we have allocated approximately 50% of those royalty revenues to finance the design work on the new Honors International building up to, I believe, the amount, to bring the total amount to approximately $900,000, which is the amount for design. That account started with the residual funds from what was the Colonial Courts International Building project, and we are supplementing that money with Navitas royalties to cover the cost of the design phase.
Okay, so it's that account, is it about $900,000?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
You do use some of the royalties to defray your obligations for the Pathway program.
The other 50% of royalties are being used to support other matters related to internationalization. For example, as a staff member or two in the Office of International Programs who are funded from that revenue stream also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions on any of the items? I believe that's the extent of the comments and questions.
Next, we move to Academic Affairs, Regent Dennison.
Well, the action items have been approved, so if there's anything else you'd like to comment on, feel free to, or we can go to a roll.
If Regent Minner still wishes the emeritus faculty appointment, you had expressed a desire at the committee meetings to say a few words.
Absolutely.
I had wanted that faculty to be here, but I think he's out of town. Or
he might still probably be getting out of his driveway.
Dr. Smith could not be here today, but in your program, there's a summary of Dr. Smith's extensive contributions to the university, notably in the area of library media education.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And the formation of one of our most successful distance education programs, nationally recognized. And wanted to put that in the record.
Absolutely. He's certainly made his mark on a generation of students who study library and media education, which has become an incredibly dynamic field. And his work on this campus is one of the reasons why it has been a dynamic field in this service region. So, best wishes to him.
Okay. And with that, I move to information items.
I think we're ready for that.
Dr. Meredith, enrollment report.
What is coming around to you now is the winter J-term report. Winter term, we have had quite some success with that here in recent years, and particularly this J-term. It is up in most cases, other than maybe in sophomores area. We're up about 15 students, and that's very positive. We've encouraged that and pushed that from a lot of different areas, from academic advising units, from EM, across the board, again, fitting into our retention, moving students faster and closer to graduation. So that is a plus that we are very pleased to see. The J-term numbers are up and growing, and that's becoming of even increasing interest to our students. We did not provide today for you for spring enrollment. The school started, as you well know, this week, and we're seeing much of the same patterns as we are in the fall. The students are very moving slowly to enroll, but they are enrolling. If you recall from the fall, it started out slowly but picked up over September, and as we moved towards census day, we not only increased enrollment, but increased as we had in past years. So we think that that trend is going to continue now. Also, you have a bi term in the spring that students have, you know, the coming weeks to enroll for. Dual credit has not brought in all of their students yet just because of the timing in the high schools. That will continue to increase over the coming weeks. ESLI and Novitas numbers over the next 10 days will also end. All those students are not in and checked in. So the reason I'm saying that to you is letting you know that it's a very fluid number. This morning, we were, for January spring term, right at about 18,700 students approximately. That's not necessarily uncommon in January to, you know, to see the numbers like that, but I'm confident it's going to increase over the coming weeks with the activities that we're doing in EM and business and finance and across the board. And I was very pleased to see some of the activities there in Hardin County yesterday with our relationships with Elizabethtown. I think that is just going to continue to magnify not only with dual credit, but just enrollment in general. That's a win-win for everybody. Enrollment management was is excited about what that will bring us, further opportunities to grow our footprint there in E-Town. So you will get a full spring report at a later meeting on the spring enrollment, but it is up and down every minute, if you will. Provost Emsley, did you have other?
The only thing I would like to add is we're seeing a lot of positive feedback from our new scholarship program.
Yes.
Where we have a huge number of highly motivated, very successful high school students who had previously been ineligible for institutional scholarship support will now be automatically eligible for up to, you know, $3,000 of scholarship funds based on their GPA and ACT score. And that, I am told from the recruiters and folks in the field, is being very positively received and should be reflected in the coming fall's enrollment numbers.
The scholarship deadline is January 15th, so that's a fairly hard deadline, but we still will take students even after that somewhat, but over the coming month to 5 weeks, we'll know better where we are with scholarships. The presidential scholarship process will kick in, you know, as we get closer to March, where we invite them into interviews. And that's different people in the room will participate in that. And I'm told all of those numbers, presidential and all scholarship applicants, are up significantly. So that's a good plus. So more information to come. We're comfortable that over the next month or so, we have a lot of work to do in enrollment management and working with business and finance on creatively helping these students find ways to finance their college. I mean, that's an ongoing problem. It's not going to go away. It's with us. But it's not just with WKU, that's across the state. And I think we'll be pretty comfortable shape later in the spring to give you a full report.
One of the dynamics, I think, as board members is helpful for you to continue to understand is the evolving nature of Dr. Meredith's business. While most of his staff is focused like a laser on next fall's enrollment, which is critical and most important, and all the high school visits and from the Honors College to those on the margin and everything in between, that staff also, it's become more commonplace to be consumed with the current semester and making sure that we sustain what we have previously enrolled. And so it's kind of a dual, very pretty intense, Jolie, effort on the part of a lot of people. So that world is evolving. And in fact, there are some things that we're learning as we communicate with students who were registered last fall but may not have yet enrolled this spring with some 6 weeks. And you see the winter term reports. So, you know, 10% of our students are enrolled in winter term, so 90% are not. And they've got a six-week break. And what we're learning from talking with students, as I understand it, is a lot of students, you know, find jobs over that long of a break and then are forced to make a decision. Do I quit the job I've got and come back to school? Well, you know, I'm starting to make a little money here. And it's a dilemma that we're going to address with the academic calendar in terms of the winter break, because what we thought, well, we're studying all the dynamics, and as I said, it's a continuing, it's an evolving process that we're researching. We're also going to be, and this isn't in a report, but in the future you'll be hearing more from us about being more aggressive with online programs for students that can choose to stay at home and work that job and enroll more and more online or in more convenient ways. And we're going to continue to refine our online programs. We're studying a KCTCS program called KCTCS On Demand. Start a course at any time, finish it at any time. And there may be 30 or 40 enrolled in a class, but every student has a different timeline and a different sequence and a different schedule, which is, challenges the faculty member to work that. But we're studying the success or not of that program, and we understand nothing is stagnant in the world of enrollment management and the whole enrollment profile. And we've got to continue to be nimble and adapt to what the marketplace demands, the marketplace, whether it be our current students or prospective students. So I really commend the entire enrollment management team because that kind of job that somebody may have applied for in enrollment management a couple of years ago might be a completely different job today or a year from now. So it's in some ways it's exciting, in other ways it's pretty stressful.
It's definitely a brave new world, and the retention is even more so a piece. Dr. Carter has been a great asset to help lead us in that direction, and also with business and finance, where we're working creatively with students on how to finance that college education. We're working with business finance on a way to maybe institutionalize some of that, where it helps the students but doesn't, you know, put WKU in a bad spot either, and so we're working towards that. So right now it's one student at a time, you know, because everybody's situation is different, but we'll get there.
Ann Mead's tracking Brian's work pretty closely these days.
She has me on speed dial.
when I went to grade school in Scotland, they said there were three R's. It always confused me because it was reading, writing, and arithmetic, and that, you know, arithmetic didn't begin with an R, began with an A. It's recruitment, retention, and retrieval.
And we
have over a million adults in Kentucky who went to college and who have yet to earn a college degree. And there's a major statewide initiative. WKU does extremely well. We're one of the top two institutions in the state in terms of our growth in adult learners here with Project REAL, Reach Every Adult Learner. But we're not going to stop there. As President Ransdell said, you know, these adult learners do not necessarily fit the traditional semester mode of instruction. They want online delivery on demand, and we're looking for ways to expand our base into more of these adult learners. Huge market out there of adults who need an educational credential, and we'll be looking to providing it.
The KCTCS program that the president mentioned, how does that differ from what we already do in independent learning?
The student at KCTCS can literally, I'm told, sign up, be enrolled, and within 24 hours start that class. It is on demand, and they finish at their own pace, mm-hmm. and then start another one, rather than signing up for a particular session at a particular time. And independent learning can extend
right.
over more than one semester.
But they have 3-week classes,
yes.
6-week classes, and 14-week classes.
Okay.
Or they can tailor it to a given student to start and finish it whenever you finish
okay,
it.
So it's got a timeline, but it's start it whenever.
And it need not be a 3-hour block. It's very modularized.
And that model's hopeful with what Gordon's mentioning with this adult learner, you know, who's working, juggling family and all that. It's just, it's a totally different market, if you will.
Dr. Minter, just to add what I've been curious about, too, mm-hmm. for financial reasons, how would she structure something like that? But I was told that, for example, that you have course requirements, and if you complete a module,
you move on to the next one.
You don't lose that. You just stop the course at that point. Then you can come back at another point and say, okay, I'm going to finish the second module. And there may be components of the course until you finally complete the course. I don't know the timeline. Like our independent learning, you have, I think, 9 months, is it, to complete the course. I'm not sure what the timeline is. But it's structured, but you don't lose what you started.
Well, again, I'm getting outside my wheelhouse here, but federal financial aid, you have a certain period of time in which you have to commit to completing a class if you want to get federal financial aid. Now, if you're not on federal financial aid, then that's a non-factor. But
a lot of our online students are. So.
Yeah. So, point is, stay tuned. It's an ever-evolving profile, and our goal is to maintain a stable enrollment. We'd like to continue growing, but boy, the first objective is to be stable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our second information item feeds rather well from that. As you may have noticed in our enrollment reports, our significant fraction of our student body are in fact high school students. To whom we are bringing the college experience early. You know, while they're in high school, the so-called dual credit program, where high school juniors and seniors can earn real college credit, WKU courses, taught by credentialed WKU instructors. And Beth Lavis was our Division of Extended Learning and Outreach Associate Vice President. Sends her regrets she couldn't be here this morning. But Laura Rickey, our Director of Academic Outreach at DLO, he is here and has a brief presentation. And dual credit, Laura.
The Division of Extended Learning and Outreach was asked to administer WKU's dual credit program in 2005. And our team consists of the program coordinator, Dwayne Needley, who's here with us, and our program specialist, Brittany Jones. The dual credit program provides high school students who are ready for the rigor of college the opportunity to take courses and earn university credit prior to their high school graduation. It's not a gifted and talented program. It's all about access, supporting WKU's mission of extending lifelong learning opportunities to our constituents. Study after study has shown that the students who participate in dual credit programs, and sometimes you may hear them referred to as concurrent enrollment in programs, are more likely to attend college and to persist. And it's impacts like these that led the CPE to implement a statewide policy on dual credit. It's modeled after the same tenets of best practices that we've used here at WKU to inform our own administration, those recommended by the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Programs. Recently, we had the opportunity to talk about our administrative procedures with WKU's Academic Quality Committee. We received an invitation from Dr. Guy Jordan. And some of the dual credit program employs a number of quality control measures because we want to ensure that the academic experience of the student is equivalent to that he or she would experience if they were in a classroom on our hill or at one of our regional campuses. Dual credit courses are not advanced high school work like AP. They are WKU's approved academic curriculum, and students receive credit that's reflected on a university transcript just as any other students would be. Some of the quality enhancement measures that we utilize in regards to instruction, those who teach through the program are fully credentialed through WKU's academic departments. They undergo the same process as all WKU part-time faculty do. And then we pair our high school teachers with a liaison in each academic discipline. And those faculty liaisons, they work with the high school teachers on things like syllabus construction, textbook adoption, understanding the requirements of that course, and often they will even provide the high school teacher with course materials and resources. We have a number of professional development opportunities available for our high school teachers. For instance, last summer, we sponsored 10 area foreign language teachers to attend a professional development training orchestrated by Dr. Laura McGee and the Modern Languages Department. It helped to equip these teachers with the new types of instructional strategies and assessments that they need as we move into this proficiency-based learning model. And WKU is a great, the dual credit program is a great value to students and their families, which can lower the cost of their bachelor's degree. The courses cost $200, and that this year represents a discount of over 80%. And we've held that cost the same ever since fall 2005, so they are not experiencing an increase every year. It's the tuition that's paid on or on behalf of the student that funds the administration and the cost of delivering the program. Each year, we budget over $20,000 to provide graduate scholarships to high school teachers who may want to become WKU part-time faculty. We send an allocation fund based on enrollment back to school so that they can build their program in their high school with scholarships for their students and textbooks. In the fall, for example, Edmondson County High School chose to purchase the English 101, a 100 Introduction to College Writing text for their students with their allocation. And some of those area school systems believe in dual credit to such an extent that they actually budget the course tuition and pay it on behalf of their students or purchase the textbooks for the courses there. Our state also has a scholarship program. It's need-based, the Mary Jo Young Scholarship Program. So with all these different sources of support, half of the students that participated this past fall received some sort of scholarship support to take the dual credit classes. Each year, the program has grown in terms of students served, credit hours earned, new partnering high schools, and breadth of the courses offered. But dual credit isn't new here at WKU. It's built on a great foundation and an outstanding reputation, thanks in large part to the work of Dr. Kate Webb and Professor Larry Bird. They've had a long-standing SPAN chemistry program in partnership with our area of high schools that dates back to the 1980s. And other STEM disciplines in Ogden College have started looking at that model of excellence that the chemistry department developed and creating dual credit outreach efforts of their own. Last year, Dr. Keith Andrew and Dr. Richard Gelderman worked to launch two new courses in astronomy. And this year, faculty, under the direction of Dr. Jack Rudolph, have created courses in plant science and animal science that we'll be offering for the very first time at Barron County High School this spring. We're real excited about the opportunity in agriculture, and a lot of our high schools are wanting to talk more with the agriculture department in our program about bringing that opportunity to their students. You've probably heard a lot of talk about the Kentucky educational system of focusing on college and career readiness. So this fall, DLO partnered with WKU faculty and staff to help bolster that effort by creating the College and Careers Exploration course. And this is an online interactive course that's designed to help students plan for and prepare their life after high school. It uses guided self-assessments and reflective activities so that they can explore various post-secondary and career paths. And that course was was developed with Dr. Merrill Price, the Associate Dean in the University College, and Dr. Peggy Crow in Housing Residence Life, works with the student programs, and Dr. Lynn Holland of WKU Career Services. And Dr. Tuesday Helbig and Carl Lavis were instructors for the course, and then they served as mentors to a number of facilitators of small group sections. So the students got a lot of very important feedback while they were pursuing this course. And it was so popular, in fact, that we were not able to enroll all the students who wanted to take it, so we're going to offer it again this second bi-term for students once again. And we've received inquiries from Jefferson County Schools about this program. It's a real exciting opportunity for us and for WKU to start to partner with our high schools and assist them in meeting this mission of ensuring that every Kentucky high school student graduates college and or career ready. For example, our potential partnership with Hardin County Schools and their early college initiative. We think this is going to be a real important area in the dual credit program to help the high schools meet this mission that they're being held accountable to.
Do you know of any other physicists who are thinking about offering a course in astronomy?
I have not heard of that, but I think that would be met with wonderful enthusiasm, because we do hear that physics is an area of constrained resource in our high schools. That's an area that that the high schools, you know, their budgets are under a lot of pressure, and to hire faculty and in all those areas. And that's
apparently Beth's communication channel is not as well established as I thought, but the provost intends to teach a dual credit course on astronomy this fall as a kind of a MOOC, massively open online course type experiment. We'll probably go for about 1,000 or 2,000 students.
Wow.
With a combination of online learning, a little bit of face-to-face, planetarium shows in the evenings to bring the students on campus, and looking forward to it.
That'll be exciting. That'll be met with a lot of enthusiasm at our area high schools. They really turned to WKU, especially for that kind of curriculum that they don't have in their high schools, expanding that breadth of opportunities for their students. And so that will be one. And that's part of the factors that have led to a huge growth that we've seen in online. We're really working to expand the number of credit course opportunities that we are able to make available to our high school students. Part of that is driven by Babbel, the Barron Academy of Virtual and Expanded Learning, which is operated by the Barron County School System. But it is Kentucky's diploma-granting virtual high school, and its mission has become even more important now that the Kentucky Virtual High School has ceased operation. So they're asking for us to, you know, more opportunities for the students that are participating with them. We also, online is in a lot of demand at our smaller high schools where they don't have enough students to set aside a block of time to take a college course, and our homeschool students, and then some students whose schedules, they're involved in things like chorus and band, so their high school schedule doesn't give them as much time to take elective credit. Online courses can be a really great opportunity for those students. And fall over fall, we were up 530% in online dual credit enrollments, and we expect this to be a really robust area of growth in the future. And so if you have anything you'd like to know that I haven't covered, myself, Dwayne's here, between the two of us, we might have an answer.
The map on page 16 of the Regent's book illustrates those counties where there is a school district with which we have a working agreement.
Mm-hmm. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You'd mentioned making funds or courses accessible for teachers within the system to get graduate credit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that in the math and science area there is the SkyTeach program, which may be an accessible place for assistance and financial assistance for those people. And then the other question is, how many academic disciplines are actually participating in this program? You mentioned the various academic disciplines. Do you
mm-hmm.
every department at the university, or half, or
it's increasingly broad, and that number grows all the time. We have psychology and sociology and communication.
Yes,
Modern Language Department offers 5 different languages, Arabic, Chinese, French, German, Spanish. We've had participation through the journalism and broadcasting, the sciences, chemistry, agriculture now, and physics and astronomy. Education, we have a wonderful program and a really vibrant academic liaison in that's working with future teachers to get them interested and excited about the profession of teaching. And we've done history, math, English.
we partner with all the colleges on campus due to a recent interest from Dr. Chris Brown in personal and finance. And so with that lead addition of interest, I think we have 5 teachers that want to teach that class in the fall. Now we partner with every college. And I was kind of waiting for that. So now we can be proud of that partnership. I think there are about 20 different courses that we have offered recently.
But there are still some academic departments that are a little slow to come around. Congratulations to your success, and also congratulations to the departments that are participating, it seems like.
We have an outstanding faculty. The way that they're truly interested in developing the capabilities of the high school faculty and they're meeting the students' needs, it's really commendable.
So some courses are taught by our faculty. Some courses are taught by high school faculty, which we certify.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the process that a high school teacher goes through in order to be certified by us to teach a WKU course in that school?
We usually are, since Duane is in the schools, we'll gather the information from the person who's interested and bring it to the department head for review. And if they have the required master's degree and 18 hours of coursework in the discipline, and that's what the scholarship program is designed to do, to build that their credentials in that specific discipline. Then we start to work with the liaison after that. So it's like a person who would be interested teaching part-time for Western in any other capacity. That credentialing decision is in each academic department head's.
We may teach in disciplines where our own on-campus department may not have yet come along. We may be teaching that discipline in schools where the high school teacher becomes certified to do so. Correct?
Yeah, I only clarify that. Our regional accreditation requires that any instructor of record hold either a terminal degree in the field or a master's degree with 18 hours of graduate credit in the discipline being taught. So they are our faculty. They are just as credentialed as any other faculty member teaching a course. They are teaching our courses. So essentially that high school teacher also has a faculty position, part-time faculty position at WKU. They are an honest-to-God member of our faculty, credentialed as any other faculty member would be.
Gotcha. Could Dr. Meredith claim them as one of his recruiters as well?
I was going to say that being dual credit obviously is the right thing to do in the high schools. It is one of the many forms of outreach that their success, DM's success, is WKU's success. So, yes, and it just, it's another avenue or reason, if you will, to get us into the high school. So, and as it grows, we're excited about that, and many times piggyback and work hand-in-hand with Laura and Duane and Beth, any reason to get us into a high school, just another way to tell the WKU story.
Laura, you had mentioned, you looked around for Guy Jordan, who's not here today, but he chairs, so everybody on the board knows. We have an academic quality committee on the University Senate subcommittee, and we've been looking at the dual credit program and working with dual credit provost office to make sure that all of the people who are teaching these courses, who, as Provost Emsley points out, are, for all intents and purposes, WKU faculty, we want to make sure that all of these courses do hit all of the marks that we want them to hit, because you would have a problem if someone takes a dual credit course but they're not adequately prepared when they come to main campus And we want to make sure they've got those skill sets. So I think it's a really marvelous example of how shared governance works in a way that benefits everybody. We just, you know, we are trying to be good stewards of the standards so that this is the appropriate experience and people are well prepared for college work.
I guess when I look at this map, I'm a little concerned that my hometown, Allen, is not one of these counties that is included in this dual credit. I mean, I know there's other institutions. I know there's other institutions that offer dual credit. Is there another institution that's in that county that's offering dual credit? Or
Lindsay Wilson is.
Is Lindsay Wilson in there?
I believe Lindsay Wilson, ACTC somehow serves them as well. Part of my role is to meet with the school leadership, whether that's school or district, and obtain their interest and then move forward. We obviously can't serve a high school if they don't want us there. And so there have been meetings, but there has not been the request from our office to go forward. And so we can't. I guess that's where we are. I've heard from Dr. Sally Ray from the Glasgow campus that Allen County High School, Allen County, Scottsville is very interested. And so I'd like to think that we could serve them in the future, but we have not yet because they've not asked us to. So I agree, it is a glaring white spot on that map, as is Grayson, which is kind of right in the middle of a red hotbed. So. I have met with Grayson recently, and they were very excited, and they're interested in our online. So, you know, if you look at that in a year, maybe that Grayson County dot is red. But that's the reason why we don't serve Allen. It's not intentional on our part.
My hometown and my husband's hometown, but you know, right there in the middle.
We'd be more than happy to send a delegation to any high school in that area. And I think word of mouth, it will spread. The students are realizing that they get an extremely good deal on college credit. I would also like to talk about one more thing. I know time is short, but it says dual credit program, and we're also focusing more and more on packaged programs. So just a course here and a course there. And the agriculture venture that Laura talked about in Glasgow is Barron County, very similar. I think it's a 19-hour program. These students who complete that program while still in high school will arrive here with 19 hours of college credit on their transcript, and a significant sort of prerequisite set of courses, which will lead seamlessly into a major here. So bundling them into programs that lead to degrees rather than just individual courses is very important.
A student who can knock out a semester or two before, I mean, you can just see how much money they save as they move along the spectrum. I used the analogy yesterday in Hardin County at our announcement we may be creating some new math here in Hardin County of 2 + 2 + 2 = 4, where 2 years of dual credit at Hardin County Schools plus 2 years at ECTC plus 2 years at WKU equals a 4-year degree. Or maybe it's 2 + 2 + 1 equals 4. So the point was we're going to allow Hardin County students to get a jump start, and the beauty of that partnership that was announced yesterday, and I know you and Beth and Dwayne and others are going to be meeting with them shortly to begin to shape a curriculum. Mm-hmm. Good job. Thanks, Laura. Patty, downstairs in the foyer of this building, the Department of Photojournalism and History kind of teamed up on a pretty cool exhibit.
Yes. We hope that you will be able to take a look at this at some point before you leave the building today. And if something takes you away from the building and you're not able to visit it, never fear, the exhibit is open until March 29th. But this is a wonderful partnership between photojournalism and history. And we owe great thanks to President Ransdell, Provost Emsley, Dean David Lee. The School of Journalism and Broadcasting and History have obtained through the Library of Congress the work, a lot of the work of the famous Civil War photographer Matthew Brady. But what I've learned from this is that Matthew Brady, as Tim Brokema, who is an associate professor in photojournalism, says, he was running the AP of his day, which I think is such an excellent way to put it. He had a number of people working for him, and so it's Brady plus eight other photographers who became the pioneers of photojournalism, where they documented the horror of war so that no one, again, in another generation would not know how terrible war was. But the gallery where we have photography is full of interesting things, including my grandmother used to have a stereograph where you had the little visual thing. You put the cards in and you can see the very primitive 3D image. The photojournalism faculty have turned this into a 3D exhibit where you can put the little glasses on and you can see the Civil War in 3D, which is both amazing and terribly, terribly troubling as well. But what the generosity of the president and the provost and the dean's office has also done is allowed the School of Journalism and Broadcasting to create in that hallway downstairs where we always walk a permanent gallery space, and it's been crying out for this for 10 years, and it's just, it's excellent. So this is the beginning of many interesting exhibits that I know will be shown in that space that enhance the intellectual life of the university. So please, please spend some time with that and see what all these great partnerships can do.
Civil War was unfolding almost simultaneous to the perfecting of the art of a photograph.
Yes.
That really didn't exist much before that, and photography was really perfected trying to chronicle the Civil War. These are actual photographs from the 1860s. It's fascinating.
Right, and they will remain on campus. What you see in the exhibit will remain on campus on the second floor of Cherry Hall, so you can visit them there later on.
That finishes academic affairs. We will move now to executive committee. I need to make a point of correction. Action items 3.3 and 3.4 did not go through the committee system, so we will have to come back and approve those items specifically and individually.